Hello, and welcome back to Master of Achievement. I am your founder and host, Stephanie Nguyen, and today I am interviewing a powerhouse. Her name is Rebecca Del Rio. She's the Chief Revenue Officer at BizCab and also a co-founder of a unique psychometric testing software called Plumo. And she's going to share with you the inside tips on how you can create high-performing teams. So, in this episode, you're going to learn about the foundations of a successful company, including having the right people with alignment and achievement, and achieving product-market fit, managing up, especially if you're a young professional, and giving feedback to people who are higher and more senior than you so that you can have a career growth and create a safe yet demanding work culture, and then how to develop leadership skills at any level. Of course, if you find this episode valuable, please give it a 5-star rating and also share your learnings online with me, like tag me on Instagram and LinkedIn, because I would love to know what your aha moments were, what your takeaways were. So, make a post on LinkedIn, tag me, and I want to see it. Now, because of how much value there was jam-packed into this episode, I have split this into two parts. So, without further ado, let's get into part one. Thank you so much for being on Master of Achievement. I am so excited to have you here today because I'm so excited about what we're going to talk about.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here and to, get cracking and hopefully add some value to your listeners.
I'm like really excited just because for those of you who didn't know, we had a pre-conversation before this and Rebecca's about to drop some bombs on you. So, like, in the best way.
Pressure's on.
Before we start, what is one thing that people may not know about you?
Interesting one. When I actually saw this question come up, it got me like reflecting on things that have really surprised people when I've kind of told them. So probably something is that, I'm traditionally a pretty, pulled together type of person that nobody expects that I grew up doing like enduro motocross riding or like, going camping. And I remember my dad bought me a Peewee 50 before I like knew how to ride a bike. So I feel like that's always this curveball that nobody really expects.
Yeah, what is a
Peewee 50, a little motorbike.
No, what was the first thing that you said?
Enduro. So it's like riding for a long period of time. So like
Oh
we grew up and mum and dad and myself and my brother would go camping and would go, on these long motorbike rides. And yeah, it's always a bit of a surprise to people that are
Yeah, I would not have expected that at all. So for those of you for the people who don't know what you do, and I'm also intrigued, I've never seen this title before, if I'm being honest. What is it that you do, and what is a chief revenue officer?
Yeah, good question. So I'll probably start back a bit. So my background's in performance marketing. I've worked within kind of pharmaceutical, property development, gambling, finance, and people as well. I've been fairly industry agnostic and have been more pulled into roles that are focused around problem solving with lots of data. So as a chief revenue officer at BizCap, which is a small business lending fintech company, I basically make sure that we're contributing to revenue. So that looks after sales, marketing, partnerships, and I also delve into a bit of HR. There I was employee number four, and we've funded just under $1 billion in business loans across Australia, New Zealand, and as of a few weeks ago, the UK as well. And then outside of that, I'm also the co-founder of Plumo. Plumo is a rapidly growing people technology company. We've helped a few of the top 100 fastest growing companies across Australia. And essentially, we help business leaders and individuals increase productivity, reduce turnover, and really just be happier at work.
I am so impressed, but also Rebecca showed me Plumo before, and it is incredible. It is such an incredible tool, and it's going to help, like, I mean, it is already helping so many organizations just be more aware of the people in their team and how to work better with your team. Mm-hmm. And so because you are about like creating these high performing teams, being able to scale your team, I want to understand in your perspective, what is the fundamental foundations of a successful company?
Yeah, so I think there's two key parts. First is people are key. Having the right people with alignment is really what's going to drive anything. Without, you know, people that really care and really want to, you know, put in the work in a harmonious and collaborative way, you're not going to do much. The second one really is product market fit. So understanding your target market, their problem, how you address it, how you find it, how you communicate, you know, that's really how you get scalable and sustained revenue growth. I think ideally you deliver value to your customer, you make them happy so that they stay and they tell other people about you. And I guess that's the exact same principle when it comes to people. Make them happy so they stay and they tell other people about you.
I want to delve deeper into that, like make your employees happy. I think there's two trains of thoughts. I guess what is the limit to making your employees happy that it becomes unproductive to your team output? You know, like, yeah, so what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, so I guess when it comes to like how to actually make people happy, I mean, it's a very loaded question. I guess really, in my view, the key to really having a high-performing team is increasing awareness and understanding. When I say awareness of understanding, I mean awareness and understanding of yourself and then also awareness and understanding of others. So if people are able to understand themselves more and really understand the natural positive and negative biases that they may have, they will then understand the best way that they can bring value and add impact into meetings, ideas, you know, innovation, and ultimately just their day-to-day work. Once you've kind of increased your awareness and understanding of yourself, if you're then able to increase your awareness and understanding of others by really seeing through their lens and understanding what are they thinking, what's their perspective? You know, if Stephanie's just had three projects that have failed, then if I'm bringing to her a new project, she's probably going to be in a fairly, you know, conservative, risk-averse kind of lens. So what do I need to provide Stephanie to ensure that she's going to be able to understand, you know, why this project that I'm pitching to her should be done and she should give buy-in? So, you know, there's things such as, you know, I might need to give more reassurance. I might need to do more, you know, market research. So I'm able to arm Stephanie with all the details she needs to be able to make a decision with confidence, given that she is coming from a perspective of having, you know, three recently failed projects. So, yeah, I think awareness and understanding.
That's interesting that you say that, because for me personally, when I got promoted to being a cadet, from a cadet to a site engineer, for example, that was like, I didn't realize that would be such a huge jump for me. And what I found was, especially when you're going into a role of high position, you place all these expectations on yourself to perform, like to meet these certain criterias. But what you're saying here is the more aware you are of what your strengths and your weaknesses are and making your team aware of that can actually be, I guess you can work better. But like for me, I would find writing down my weaknesses or making people aware of that is really scary.
Yeah, hugely scary. I mean, like I struggle with it. I think, you know, probably as leaders, but then also as women in male-dominated industries, imposter syndrome is this huge thing. I don't think you need to necessarily like write a list of negatives, but I think there's things such as, you know, framing things. Like if I'm going into, you know, I'm a big whiteboarder and a big brainstormer and I'm really thrive in that environment. Now, yeah. If somebody's going to present to me like a 3-page document, and I know that they're likely to present it, I'm like, listen, that's not how I absorb information best. Would you mind sending it to me so I can basically pull it apart, write it myself, and then we have the meeting? So I think it's also about you don't need to provide people with these are all my negatives. It's more going, this is how I work best, and I really want to add the most value to this conversation. So let me kind of frame for you how I like, you know, need to absorb the information.
But what, for example, what if you want to strive to be a manager of like a 20-person team. And naturally or obviously, we know that to be a manager or to be a really successful leader, you might need to be like really extroverted, have high charisma, be able to communicate with people. But then what if your natural bias is that you are actually quite introverted and struggle to make decisions? You're not confident in that. So by sharing that information, would that actually hinder like your opportunity to grow into that space?
No, I mean, like, if I look back on, like, you know, my career, not that it's over by any means, I'm just getting going. But, you know, if I think about one thing I wish I had started doing sooner, it's probably closing the gap between who I am inside work and outside of work. You know, I spent a number of years feeling like I had to, you know, be this certain person or project or pretend who I was at work. Once I realized, like, oh, no, I'm actually, like, great and I'm fine and, you know, being pointy and not being fully well-rounded actually has its superpowers as well. And, you know, being really open with I can be who I am inside and outside of work and they can be the one person, you know, minus some verbiage and some kind of, you know, unstructured views, but, you know, they can be the same person. I think that when we look at archetypes and preferences, so for instance, with my archetype, I'm a charismatic driver, but I have a very low confidence level. So on the scale of confidence, it's actually quite low. And when you think about how that kind of comes out, it's things such as when I'm making decisions, and, you know, the more decisions you make, the better you get at them, like any kind of thing. But when I'm making decisions, I'll often grab somebody. So, you know, Adam, the COO at BizCap, me and him share an office, and he'll have no idea about a marketing tactic that I'm talking about. But by verbalizing and saying to him, hey, this is my thought process, this is the decision I'm looking at making, verbalizing it to him will sometimes give me the confidence to make that decision. And a lot of the time we actually already know the answer and we know it's the right one, but having that extra confidence. On the other hand, though, if I'm managing somebody that has a very high confidence level, that's something to then be aware of because I can be like, okay, cool. Well, have they thought of everything? Because if they're always super confident in their decision making, maybe they're jumping into that decision too quickly or they're not thinking about the whole thing. So I think for, like, you know, new leaders coming up and existing leaders continuing to progress their career, if you're able to really be aware of, you know, your biases and the things that are, you know, pointier and softer for you, you're then able to go, I need to work hard to get better at that because naturally it's not something I like doing or naturally find easy to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think again, like, I love what you're saying here and I can relate. I think sometimes I've worked under leaders who you can tell what areas they really need to improve on, but because they feel like they have to wear this position at and become this person to match the position title, there's a huge disconnect. Yeah. And sometimes I just think, like, dude, if you just tell us that you're struggling with this or like you don't know it, rather than pretending that you do and trying to act like this manager, we would respect you so much more. We would be willing to help you and like buy into this, like, this team bonding rather than you trying to act like this person that you're currently not.
Yeah. I think even what you've just said there really alludes to something as well. I think for anybody, whether you're in management or not, being able to give feedback and manage up is also extremely valuable. You know, the amount of times that, you know, I have or I've had people around me or people within my team sit there and be like, hey, Beck, I'm not sure about how you went about this, you know, and it's always hard to give constructive feedback, especially to, like, you know, hierarchical kind of like superiors. But if you're able to give feedback, you know, upwards as well, I feel like it's a really big development piece for yourself. Like if you're able to sit there and be like, you know what, I don't really like how you did that, or, you know, do you need some help here, or can I assist? Or, you know, even framing things such as, you know, this is something I've been working on, you know, where do you think I could improve, and vice versa, you know, this is some feedback I have from you. I think really managing up is a huge thing to really elevate your own career as well. If you're able to start to sit there and, like, almost develop up as well. Like, it's huge.
Yeah, because people, when we speak about feedback, we always think about it as giving feedback downwards, like to people who are more junior or less experienced. But you're so right. Like, being able to give feedback upwards is so scary, but also such an important skill set, because I think sometimes we think that just because someone is more senior than us, they already know it all. But what I have to remind myself also is, like, everyone is always on a journey. Like, everyone is always on this self-development, like, always learning. And as managers, like, they also need to learn how to become better managers as well. And they're not going to be able to do that if people aren't giving them feedback.
Yeah.
You know, because I think there's that pressure of, like, well, if I give them feedback, is that going to affect their perception of me and my career growth? No, but in fact, like, it's helpful for them.
Yeah, I think especially, you know, I'm a big believer that, you know, the culture that you want to try and be in and create is a safe yet demanding one. And what I mean by that is safe in the way that people can really be themselves. They can give the feedback. They can have the hard conversations. But demanding in the fact that, you know, we want to perform and we want to know what good is and to exceed that. But I think it's a really common misconception that, you know, only management are leaders and only management can give feedback and have the difficult conversations. It's like, I would say the quickest way to elevating your career is to really start to manage up and to be that leader already. You don't need to have manager in your title. Yeah. You don't have to have lead or whatever it else is in your title. Like, to be a manager, you can just, you know, manage yourself, manage up, consistently show that you deserve to have a seat at the table, that your opinion is, you know, thoughtful, constructive, you're pushing the boundaries, and, you know, you're really trying to, like, you know, elevate and have a huge impact on the company.
I love that you said, because that's something that my mentor taught me 5 years ago when I changed careers from commerce to construction. I moved to Sydney, I didn't know, like, any companies, I didn't know what was going on, but I just knew that I wanted to be in the construction industry. And I came across my now mentor, and it was all about that. It was like, it's not about your job title. It's not about how many years of experience you have. You can still be a leader, even if you're a junior, and there's certain ways, like, of doing that, but it's not always, you know, the 10 years of experience, the senior project manager in your title for you to suddenly be equipped with all these leadership skills. You have to be, you know, it's kind of like a collection in your toolbox. You need to be using it every step of the way.
100%. I think even, like, what you were saying about transferring industries, like, when I moved from property development to gambling, pretty much 99% of the team knew more about horse racing, greyhounds, NFL, basketball than me, right? Like, I had no idea. Like, I'll get around any sport, but, like, I don't really follow it, right?
Yeah.
And I remember what it really taught me was almost like this vulnerable sense of leadership, where I had a team that were really, you know, they knew all the things about horses, the form, you know, what piloting meant, all these things. And then what I'm doing is I'm having to leverage their knowledge. But really what it did in turn is it built really nice connections with people, because instead of being like, I know everything about this and this greyhound racing model, I'm just like, hey, Matt, you know about greyhounds and this greyhound racing model. Let's talk about how to market it. And all of a sudden I'm utilizing his expertise instead of pretending I know anything about it. And it built a really nice trusting connection as well. That I think you don't, you know, if you are swapping industries, you don't need to be the expert on all the little minutia details. You can leverage other people.
Yeah. I think, and that's something that I've learned this year as well. It's like a lot to do with your ego. Like, when you can control your ego and just give yourself permission to not know everything and just go, hey, this is my contribution to this team, but I don't have XYZ and these people have XYZ. Let's get together in a room and just bounce ideas off each other and, like, leverage what we know and what everyone else knows to come up with an even better idea. Yeah. Like, that is so much more rewarding than sitting there going, like, I want to be the person with the best idea and get all the, you know, credibility and the awards and the recognition.
Yeah, I think really respecting diversity of thought is a really, like, big leveler. Like, if you can sit there and go, people are coming from all these different viewpoints and, you know, their brains work differently as well, and really going, I value that, I respect that, and having deep diversity of thought is going to allow for the right answer and the right outcome. You know, really being on a mission to not be personally right. Like, it's okay to get it wrong. It's okay to know nothing. If you can drop that and you can be comfortable with that, and then you can just go, let's work collaboratively to get the best outcome for the company, for this project, for our team, and not I'm on this mission to be personally right.
What would you say to leaders who and managers who have really high pressure KPIs and in their mind they're just like, we have to perform, like we need to create a result, and there's no time to sit there and listen to everybody's, you know, opinions and stuff. Like, and I can give an example. It was like I was in a meeting the other day and we're going through this meeting and it became a discussion, but you know, meetings are such a contentious thing because, as everyone says, sometimes it's not really productive. So there was a fine balance between like, hey, we're having a really great discussion where people are able to be creative and think outside the box and contribute to projects that they're normally not like working on. But then at the same time going like, hey, we scheduled this meeting for 30 minutes. Like we need to get this going type thing. What is your advice on how to still maintain that creativity, like create a space for creativity, but still work within the constraints of time, like money, resources, that sort of thing?
Yeah. So I've probably got a bit of a contentious view here. It's actually plagiarized from my husband, but, you know, everybody deserves an opinion and everybody deserves a view, but not everybody's opinions are weighted equally. Like if somebody is a data scientist and we're talking about a machine learning predictive model for, you know, how to assess churn, the data scientist holds way more weight than my view. Like they should get more airtime than me. So I think probably that's one stark reality, is that, you know, views based on the conversation should be weighted differently. The second one is when it comes to, like, I'm very guilty of, you know, getting carried away with brainstorming and ideation. Like it's really like a space I love to be in. However, sometimes the best way to really get the most out of the team, out of a discussion, is to do pre-work and pre-data collection. So, you know, you can use Google Forms, you can use, you know, SurveyMonkey, whatever you want to use, Slack bots, and you go, this is the meeting title, this is what we're talking about, here's five questions, answer those five questions, send that to everybody, and then you pull it all into an Excel spreadsheet, and then the person leading the meeting or whoever else, like normally you just share it with everybody so anybody can see prior to attending the meeting, can go, okay, I can see Stephanie's thinking this, Rebecca's thinking this, Lisa's thinking this, Matt's thinking this, Abe's thinking this. Okay, there's some similarities here. That probably has a bit more juice and a bit more conversation and, you know, really doing that pre-work on meetings to be able to hold the most effective meeting. Because I agree, things like time and pressure restraints, like if somebody's having a huge milestone or a huge KPI or deadline that they're working to, they don't want to be in a 30-minute meeting that could be 10 minutes. You know, they're sitting there going, I need to just get back to my desk or get back on site or do whatever, and I need to, like, have the conversations, do the work. So I think really holding really efficient and effective meetings is like a skill in itself. There's a great tool called Fellow, actually, that I use for a lot of meetings where you can kind of do the questionnaire thing to all attendees. It records the meetings, you share the notes out, and it's like, boom. Highly recommend everybody looks at it. It's just great. But, yeah, I think really holding effective and efficient meetings is a huge skill in itself. And if you can work out that or work out 10% better than what you're currently kind of running with, you know, that's a nice little thing.
I love that suggestion. That's like, I think a lot of technology companies do that. Like Amazon's done something similar where they send out a memo and everyone reads it, and it's like, it might be like I think Jeff Bezos says he restricts it to 3 pages or something. And it's like, or even 1 page. Like if you can't get it into 1 page, then your thoughts you don't know what you're talking about very mm-hmm. clearly. Of course, like sometimes it might be more than a page, but they send that out before they even get into the meeting so people know what the outcome of it is.
Yeah.
I think
he actually also has a really interesting team that, sorry, an interesting rule that no team can be bigger than two pizzas. Oh. So if you can't, so every new person in is kind of a new communication line. So Jeff Bezos basically has a two pizza rule. Teams okay. can be no bigger than what two pizzas can feed. And, you know, really keeping teams nice and small to allow for, you know, the right conversations to be had. But, yeah, he's got a few good ones actually. So there's one, it's called like disagree but commit. I feel like I use a phrase weekly, but it's basically like if you're in a team environment and there's five of you and four of the people are going, I think we should do this, I think we should do this. And I'm sitting there going, nah, I hate this idea. But if the collective agrees, then I have to just disagree, make my view known that I don't disagree, but commit because that's what we're doing and I need to get on board to really, you know, help drive it home. He's got a few good ones.
I'm going to look into that. So that was part one with Rebecca Del Rio. I hope that that was really valuable to you. Like I said, I would love it if you shared your learnings, your aha moments online and tag me. I would love to see it. I will read every single one of it. And I hope that you are excited for part two because it gets juicier. It gets even more valuable. And I'm so excited to share it with you. So thank you so much for listening to this episode. I will speak to you in the next one.